It's so easy to say, oh, it's because I don't have any connections, and I'm a woman, and I'm late in my career, and this is why it's not working. No, at across the board, I can come up with millions of examples of people who, whatever they look like or who they are, this has happened to them. And it's how have they gotten themselves out of this situation? How have they pushed a little further to get that luck, to get that fire started?
You've landed inside Launch Street, the business innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gondor.
Hey everyone, Tamara here from Inside Launch Street. I am so excited for today's interview because, as you will see, our guest is a powerhouse of experience and insight and personality. And I just love it when all those three come together. So I'm going to let our guests introduce themselves. I like to do that because it always fascinates me what you bring forward versus what I say about you. Kate, I'm so glad you're here. Why don't you tell us all a little bit about who you are?
Well, first of all, thank you. It's wonderful to talk to you today, and thank you for this opportunity. How would I describe myself? How would I introduce myself? I would say I am the host and creator of a program on PBS called To Dine For. And the premise of the program is very simple. We go with the guests to their favorite restaurant, wherever that is in the country, to eat what they love, to see where it is that they love. And then we let the food and the restaurant be the backdrop for a conversation on what they created. So all the guests on the show are at the intersection of creativity and innovation. They have literally brought something to life through their own hard work and hustle. And I'm really interested in the story of how did they do that, what they learned along the way, and of course, what they love to eat. So that is the show that's currently airing on public television stations nationwide. It's also on pbs.org, and you can find it on Amazon Prime.
So I love the show. I've dug in, of course, and watched. So I have to ask, because on one hand, when I was watching it, Kate, I felt so familiar. Like, obviously, this is how we would get insights. We would take someone out to eat. We would have coffee with them.
Yes.
Right? But nobody's really ever done that before. So on one hand, it felt so familiar. And on the other hand, it was so new. So how did you, what was the inspiration for this idea?
Well, first of all, I'm obsessive almost to a crazy level with food. I love food so much. And it really is a personal passion. It is not my career. I am not a chef. I am not a lifelong restaurateur. That is truly my personal passion. My background is journalism. I've been a reporter in small, medium, and large cities. Started in Indiana, South Bend, Indiana, worked in Little Rock, Arkansas, became the morning anchor in New York at CBS for 5 years, and then went on to become the evening anchor in Chicago for another 5 years. And for me, it is the culmination of all my years of storytelling. You know, when you put someone in their favorite spot, when you bring them to a restaurant, just as you alluded to, you really see people come alive. You see a different side to them than if you interviewed them in a sterile conference room or a TV segment that was just 2 minutes in a studio. You see a completely different side. And so for me, it was the idea that this would be a storytelling vehicle, the restaurant. It would combine my personal passion of food. And also, it would be a vehicle to hear these incredible stories of luminaries and visionaries at their favorite spot.
So I'm curious, because you've had some amazing, amazing guests. First of all, let me say it differently. You can tell I've got like four questions in my head at once.
That's okay.
What is your criteria for someone being worth sitting down and having a meal with? Kind of when you think about their personality, their mindset, their accomplishments, what are you looking for?
Sure. It's very clear. It's two things. I'm looking for someone who has brought an idea from inspiration to execution through their own hard work and hustle. So they have created a company. They have written a book. They have brought something to life beyond itself, whether it's a nonprofit. I just interviewed Misty Copeland, who created an entire genre of ballet based on going from homeless. She was homeless at one point, was a child prodigy at the age of 13, which was considered too late to become a ballerina. She was considered too muscular to be a ballerina. She didn't have any money for ballet training. And yet, right, the second part, through her own grace and grit, became one of the most famous ballerinas of all time. So beyond what they created, there's a second component to the guests, and that they have a vision beyond themselves. So they are in service to the world in some way. And it is that two-part component that really, you know, has me fired up for wanting to dine with them and to hear their story. So that's kind of the prereqs that I go into each, like kind of evaluating each guest.
So first of all, I have to say, Kate, that I love that you said hard work and hustle, because I think oftentimes when we think of the people on the show, the people we think of as the great innovators, we always see them as this kind of magical unicorn that none of us could be.
Yes.
And I think that's totally false. And the people in my community know that right. We are democratizing innovation. That is our goal here at Launch Street and everything we do. But I love that you said that, because I think that we often miss. We talk about these people as a great talent, but we forget the fact that, like, they came from humble beginnings and put so much hard work into their visions.
You know, it's so funny. When I started to create this show, it was just an idea. And I feel like the first year, maybe 2 years, was like taking two wet sticks and rubbing them together, trying to create a fire. And it was unsuccessful, and it was frustrating as hell. And it was, you know, it's no fun at the beginning when you have this dream and you have this passion for an idea, whether you're Howard Schultz or Norman Lear or Jessica Alba, and you're trying to get something off the ground, right? You're trying to innovate. You're trying to hustle, right? And there is a definite mark between the ability to hustle and to bring, it's not just hard work, it's to the next level hard work that gets it going. And so what has been helpful for me and inspiring for me is to see that it happens to everyone. It's not just, you know, it's so easy to say, oh, it's because I don't have any connections and I'm a woman and late in my career and this is why it's not working. No, at across the board, I can come up with, you know, millions of examples of people who, you know, that whatever they look like or who they are, this has happened to them. And it's how have they gotten themselves out of this situation? How have they pushed a little further to get that luck, to get that fire started?
You said something else that I want to dig into for a second. You said it quickly, but I think it's so powerful. I want to take a moment and dig in. Mm-hmm. You had said that they're of service to the world. Like they have a vision beyond themselves. And just to be fully transparent, lately that's the conversation I've been having with myself. Is like why am I doing this? And when I really realized that I have this huge desire to help everybody see their own potential and to live it. That's really what innovation is all about. Things started to open up. I don't want to say it's all gone the way it's planned, because it never, ever, ever does. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting difference in mindset. And I'm curious why or how you realize that. Because I actually think, too, that being of service helps you find more innovation, because you're less afraid, your ego's less in the way, and you're more about that end goal of service than you are about the ego coming forward. That was a lot of questions in there.
You know, this is going to be really off topic, but it's just kind of where this conversation has taken me. I grew up Catholic. My dad brought me to like 7 a.m. Mass every Sunday in the outskirts of Boston, small town called Lakeville, Mass. And at some point when I was there every Sunday, the priest asked me to start reading, be a reader, right? So you read like from the gospel, either the first reading or the second reading. And I was like 13. I was young. Yeah. And I remember being so nervous, right? So nervous that I would stumble. I couldn't do it.
Say the wrong thing. Offend.
Yes. And I was young. I hadn't done any like public speaking or reading. And I remember the priest, in a very Boston abrupt way, said to me, "This isn't about you. This is about the word of God. And to take yourself out of it, take away your nervousness. And remember, this really, you were just a vehicle to read these words." Kind of like, get over yourself is what he, that's what he, if he could say that as a priest, he would. And so I think about that when, just following your train of thought, meaning when you have an idea that is bigger than yourself, yeah. it does allow your ego to propels you and motivates you and generates more passion and hard work and hustle when you realize this is something beyond you. Yeah. It's almost engineered for more success than if it were just about you. If you were just creating a company just for profit, just so you can have a nice life in a lake house. You know what I mean? Yeah. But if you were going to contribute to the world, think of how much harder you would work. If you were going to contribute to society through whatever you were building, you would have the stamina to keep going.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You're speaking my language. I love it. It's been a big conversation in my head, in my world lately. And I do think it, to your point, and I think whether that thing that you're going for is to get to the next level at work or launch a new product or be a good team leader or, you know, be like a Misty Copeland or Jay Shetty or like any of those, regardless of where you fall in that spectrum, I think you're right. I love the way you said that. It propels you forward. I think that is great for all of us trying to drive innovation to remember that if we can connect it to something bigger than just like, I'll get recognized, I'll get rewarded, or, you know, my personal end goal, it actually propels us more. It's not even just being selfless. It actually propels
us. Yeah, because the goal, it's a bigger goal. I always say there's a reason, I don't know who said it, but they talked about having a big audacious dream and how everyone should have something like really ridiculous that they are almost embarrassed to say out loud as your big goal and dream, because that has a force within you that is so motivating. The idea that the possibility of making it happen actually makes you rise to the occasion rather than a dream that's kind of doable. Like you're like, oh, I can get that done. I could probably get that done. But if it's so crazy, you're like, oh my gosh, it activates resources and ideas and thoughts that you would never have thought if it were just something mediocre.
So I'm curious because, first I want to ask you a question about something you said, and then I want to delve into some of the things you've learned along the way from your guests. Mm-hmm. You had said the first 2 years were really tough, the wet sticks.
Right.
What do you think helped you flip it? And I'm asking because I think there's a lot of us, in our community who have something we've been working on and it feels like that, like two wet sticks, and there is a tipping point, but we have to get there. So I'm curious what that tipping point was for you or when those sticks started to dry out a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when you are hustling in the direction you love and you are going all in, right? You are doing everything you can to make something work. Everyone has a different definition of what hard work is, but when you are really going for it, I do believe that, the harder you work, the luckier you get, meaning something's going to break. Right. Something's going to happen. Someone's going to give you a chance. Yeah, exactly. Like someone at some point, somebody's going to hand you some money and say, go for it. Or someone's going to give you that opportunity or someone's going to be on the show. For me, it was, I had this idea. I was looking for a home for the show. I was looking for the funding for the show. And then I was looking for the guests. So it was sort of like a tripod or triad of different buckets of success that I needed to kind of hit. Yeah. So it wasn't just creating a show. It was creating a business, a production company, funding. There's a lot of different moving parts. And I think when you get a little bit of momentum in any level, you have to celebrate that and get excited about that and let that move you forward and realize that success can translate. Some things are trickier than others. And I would say to get, as you say, get your ego out of it and to know that this happens to everyone. When you actually, the funny thing about my personal endeavor here with To Dine For is that I am actually getting in front of all of these people who have done the same thing, right? It, on a much grander scale. Howard Schultz received 242 rejections before anyone actually gave him any funding to purchase the Starbucks brand. Here he is being rejected left and right. That makes you realize, well, gosh, if he's having a hard time, of course you're going to have a hard time. I mean, it is more fair than you think. Business is more fair than you think. Now, I'm not to say there isn't injustices and racial inequality and all those things, because those are very real. But everyone has a hard time. And once you can wrap your brain around that, it actually steals you to move forward.
Well, they said that steals you. And I find that, you know, sometimes I'll see people and they'll have like an instant hit out of the gate and you're over there going, what the heck? Like,
how'd that happen?
Like, where? And it's not even that good. But I find that those end up being what one hit wonders because they're really not battle tested.
Right.
And I find that people that stay at it and have an open mind to the adjustments and the pivots you have to make along the way.
Yes.
You know, you learn and grow over time. So I'm curious, you've interviewed incredible, I mean, just incredible people, as you said, who hustle and have accomplished amazing things bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's a theme or a trend that you think makes them so innovative and so successful. And I feel like some of the answer is what you just said in the beginning and how you introduced it. But just from a broader perspective, I guess I'm asking, like, what have you learned? Like, they're so incredible.
Right. I think, and we could literally do about 2 hours on the connective tissue between all these guests. I will say in a short answer, I would say two things. Unbelievable amount of passion. Mm. You have to love it so much. You have to care about it so much. If you feel like lukewarm about something, it is going to translate. If you look at the success of the people that I've interviewed on To Dine For, they have had what Howard Schultz calls an unreasonable amount of passion, a passion that most people would be like, that's just crazy.
People are uncomfortable, I find. Like, you're like, oh, wow, that person really is into that.
Yes, the intensity, the discipline, the rigor that most people would shy away from. They don't want to do the work. They don't want to put the effort in. They don't want to do all that. So I would say really, really loving it, really, really being passionate and having a vision would be number one. And the second would be your ability to handle rejection and overcome the naysayers and to keep your vision at the forefront and realize with every no, Where am I going to go from here? Being able to handle that would be number two.
So I love what you just said. I want to pause and just let it sink in for all of us in the academy and in the community, which is like, where do we go from here when we get the no? And
yes,
I'm curious, do you see that? Because I think sometimes we see that no as a door is being shut versus, okay, that approach didn't work. That person didn't work. My communication didn't work. There's a nugget I need to figure out. That's a very different mindset than I've been shut down.
Yes, it is a mindset. It's definitely a mindset issue. I remember taking To Dine For to the Food Network and going to Chelsea at where the Food Network is located. This was several years ago, and pitching it. And there was two gentlemen across the table, and they're looking at the pilot and they're watching it. And we had a very lovely meeting. They're like, we really like this, great production value, but there's not enough food in it. So To Dine For, it takes place at a restaurant. We talk about food, but it really is a story of creators and visionaries. It really is an interview show more than a food show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they go, this has very got a news quality to it. This should be on like a CNN or a PBS. And even though that meeting was a no and a rejection, it did give me a sense of people who had looked at a million different pilots,
right.
the validation that A, they were very complimentary. The fact what they were looking at, the quality of the production was excellent. And B, they thought the home could be PBS, which it actually ended up being. And it's a wonderful home for this program. It's the perfect audience for it. And so, you know, it's taking every no and seeing if there's a kernel of something to learn, if there's a kernel that is going to propel you in a different direction. You know, sometimes if you really listen, instead of just hearing the no, they're giving you clues, you know. Some of these no's are very valuable. I met with so many people about how to create a show, television, programming executives, and I would listen to what they had to say. And some of them obviously had more to say and more advice, but I hung on everyone's word and really took it to heart and tried to think, what can I learn from this situation? And kind of use that information to inform my next move.
That's so great. So I just want to tell you that Mia, who's one of our amazing Academy members, says passion and rigor are two things that have helped me stay and thrive in my business for 23 years. Mm. That's 23 years or so. I love that, Mia. She's phenomenal. And the other thing I just wanted to add to what you said about the kind of getting through it and drive is I think that it doesn't mean, and I'd love your perspective on this, it doesn't mean that everything is rosy and happy and the passion is all bubbly all the time. Like, I know that I have to do things I don't love to do, but yes. But knowing that they are stepping stones to the greater end goal keeps me motivated while I'm doing them, so that I don't frankly approach them half-assed. Because, like, give you an example, this morning I was dealing with email funnels, probably one of my least favorite things to do. Like, that's not fun, right?
Right.
But I know that if I can get that right, right, with my team, that I can, that it gets us to the place and the impact I want.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, in all these conversations, and you're obviously a pro at the asking questions, the journalism background obviously shows in the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have you ever been just surprised by an answer, or is it, I mean, I'm sure you've heard it all. So is there anything that surprised you or made you go, huh, I've never really thought of it that way?
Oh gosh. Every conversation.
I mean,
that's my goal. If everything I'm hearing is something I've already heard before, I'm not doing a good job as an interviewer. You know, my goal is to get them to say something unique, something that's really them, something that maybe you haven't heard. So I would say that is part of the process of doing a really great interview, is where, you know, you want them to fully be themselves and to really reveal the true story of how they got there. You know, it's sort of like how I built this with food, you know? Wow. And so I hope to be surprised by almost every interviewer to hear a story that I haven't heard. That is the goal.
I got a great question from one of our Academy members, because I think, you know, we, in my world, we spend a lot of time not just talking about how to drive innovation, how to be more innovative, right? How to ignite that in your brain, use that power, but also how to communicate in a way that gets buy-in, because I think there's two sides to the coin. So it's great if you have a bunch of ideas, but if nobody's listening, it doesn't really matter. So
great.
Yeah. So the question that the Academy member just put up there is, how do you prep for the interviews so that you get the most out of the conversation? I'm thinking about my meetings, but I feel like your prep applies to that. God, what a great question.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will say this, it's the component that is so simple that almost everyone forgets. And that is, when I go into an interview, I try to be as prepared as I possibly can, have read everything, seen everything online, watched everything, whatever I need to do to prepare. But then I throw it all out the window, meaning I do not go in with a set of questions. I do not go in. I may have a sense of what I want to ask or how I want the conversation to go, but I want to go in with a sense of calm that I know this person. Right? I want them to show me who they are, but I want to listen to what they say, because the best questions come not from what I've written down as a great question, but as a follow-up to what they have just said. So, and that takes a lot of practice. I mean, that's why doing, you know, podcasts or doing, being in any situation like you and I are in right now, the more people can do that, the more they're going to be comfortable being in a scenario where they listen and then respond to the response, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. I think that often, and I used to be guilty of this for sure, is we're listening so that we can respond the way we've already pre-planned to respond. So
exactly.
We're really listening. What do you think, and I'm really curious from your perspective, especially with the, like, your years of journalism, what advice would you have to dial up that active listening skill? It's a tough one, I think. And you're right. It's a skill and it takes practice. I think anyone can do it, but it's not always natural.
Right. Because when you're doing an interview or you're in a meeting, there's, for some people, different people have different levels of anxiety about speaking in front of public or being in front of people. And so very often just getting the question out is enough of the victory. Right. And then when they answer in a lovely way, you feel like you're done. Right. But you have to realize you're not done. In fact, you've just begun. So just know that once you've got the question out, that's the easy part. And once they've responded, that's not the end. The response is to what did they just say and why did they say it? Yeah. So you want to use this tool. You want to say, let me dig a little further. Can you explain to me why you said that? Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me why you feel that? What would it look like if A and B happened? Try and get them to play with you a little bit. That's what a real conversation is. To me, my favorite conversations are when the guest comes not to tell the story of their success for a marketing in any for any sort of marketing purposes, but when they really come with a genuine interest to be in the moment and play with me. Do you know what I mean?
I know, I totally do. And in fact, one of my favorite things to do when people ask me a question is, instead of responding, I like to say, "That's a great question. What makes you ask?" Because I actually find that that is way more, that moment where they dig is way more valuable than me answering the question out of the gate.
That's great. Because it always comes from a motivation, right? It always comes, people are coming from their own story. They're the star of their own story. And so when you throw it back on them, especially, this is more, not necessarily for an interview, but for a meeting. I think what the tool you just mentioned is great for a meeting. Because in a meeting, you're trying to get to a purpose. You're not there for discovery like you are in an interview. When you're there in a meeting, you have a purpose in mind. So it's always good to kind of get, I'm a very transparent, like, let's cut to the chase. Let's like, what are we trying to achieve here? Yeah. And so I think that's a great tool.
Yeah. Well, and I think you do a really good job of this on the show too. And you use different language, but what I've seen you do, which I think is so powerful, is you don't take anything for granted. And what I mean by that is when they say something that I would go, "Oh yeah, of course," you don't assume you know what they mean, and then you dig. And I think it's a really powerful way to get underneath those layers. Because I think sometimes even your guests, it's not that they're holding back. It's that, you know, you answer on one level, but it takes a little bit, I think, to get underneath that.
Definitely. It does take, it actually takes several follow-up questions. But getting back to the concept of innovation, which I feel like is at the heart of what your business is all about, I will say the one thing that I've really, really learned about innovation, which was a topic that I wasn't really versed in as a local news reporter and anchor. I was a storyteller, but I hadn't really specifically talked about innovation and innovative businesses. What has surprised me the most is that real innovation comes from an outsider's perspective. And so for the people who are minorities or women or people from a different land, people from a different world. It doesn't have to, you could be a white man, but you're from California and you're working in a business in Iowa. I think having a different perspective really can fuel innovation. And I've seen it across the board on so many of the guests. For example, Sarah Blakely, who created Spanx, the first self-made female billionaire in our country.
Course.
You know her, right? So, you know, her ability to realize that the entire hosiery world was run by men. And there wasn't a single woman creating pantyhose, sizing for pantyhose, any aspect of the development, distribution, marketing, nothing was a woman. This is crazy. Who wears pantyhose? Women. And so like that is an advantage. That is innovation because it came like outside the box, you know? So like when I always say, like when people feel like they are on the fringe of society or they're in the fringe of a meeting room and that their opinion couldn't matter, it matters maybe more than anyone there because they can see things that no one else can see.
So this is going to sound like a naive question, but I want to ask it anyway. If you are, I don't want to say jaded, but let's say you've been in the world a while or you've got one perspective that maybe is the norm perspective in the world that you're in, but you know that outside matters so much. What do you do to make sure you don't get stuck in that trap and you tap yourself and the others around you to get that outside view?
I think just what I said before about the people on the fringe sometimes have the best perspective on innovation. It's harnessing other people's perspectives, asking a follow-up question and looking at things from a different way. I mean, that's where disruption comes. That's where innovation comes. How can we do this better? There's always a different way. It's always amazing to me when people just kind of throw their hands up and say, "That's the way it's always been done." I mean, that's when you know for a fact that you're in an industry, you're in a setting where real innovation could take place.
You know, I interviewed the founders of Kodak, the high protein
Pancake?
Yeah, pancakes and waffles. Yes. I was sort of looking for the right word. I think they just say cakes. But one of the things that they said to me that I thought was so powerful is they said, we look to the categories that have been the same forever because there's so much room for innovation there and nobody's paying attention to it. So like that's kind of where they go. We have a question here. It's so good. It's a comment. This is why it's so important to get outside your own industry. Yes, I agree. And, you know, it must for you, Kate, it must fuel so much creativity and innovation to have this intersection with all these different types of people.
It really does. And for me, when I think about how I stay inspired creatively, for me, it's always traveling or just changing location really helps me. And so like whenever I'm on a plane, I'm always thinking, I think in a completely different way. Whenever I land in a new city, my mind is firing in a different way. And so it's the same with mindset, right? Like getting yourself out of yourself to see it a different way is really like so important creatively.
So there's a comment that came in from one of the academy that actually leads me to a question. So I hope that's all right. So it says, Kirby was saying, he's phenomenal, saying otherwise it's groupthink. And you stay in a small, if you stay in a small circle, you end up with groupthink. How do you think, when you think about what your guests have told you and your own experience, how do you avoid, I'm going to layer these together, groupthink, the pull of mediocrity, people trying to kind of steal your passion. How do you steel yourself against that?
Well, that's everything. What you've just asked is everything. I think when you're excited about something or you're passionate about something, whether it's your business or you have a new idea, the first thing we do is tend to bring it to other people and say,
right,
because we want to share.
I'm excited.
Yes. And you want to share you want to explain and share what you've learned or what you're excited about. And I think that's a terrible idea because what that does is you're telling people an idea. This is at the very beginning, something that they don't know anything about. And they can't see what you, there's a reason the word visionary is because only you can see it, right? Yeah. And so it's your vision, you're excited about it. And what I would say is you have to protect that. You have to kind of put your little hands around it and let it grow and let it develop and really think about it strategically instead of sharing it with someone who might throw water on it. Yeah. And it's dead in the water before it even begins because, you know, we are influenced by people's opinions and you're like, oh, you mentioned it to three people and none of them think it's a good idea. And so you don't give it another thought when in the fact, it might be one of the greatest ideas ever. And you really have to protect what you said is protect your ideas, protect your dream and protect what makes you not the groupthink. What protect what makes you not mediocre because it really is easy to just slip into what's easy and you don't want to do that.
Yeah. It's so easy to slip into that. I think this kind of loops back a little bit to kind of what you're trying to get out of the show To Dine For. And with, by the way, actually before I go, I'm going to close out questions, tell everybody where they can connect with you and go watch the show.
Sure. So the third season of it just started on public television stations nationwide. So check your PBS local listings. You can also go to pbs.org and watch the season. And season one and season two are available on Amazon Prime right now. Mm-hmm. And for more information, go to dinefortv.com.
Right. To everybody listening, it is a phenomenal show. And Kate does a brilliant job of, I think what you said earlier, which is getting to these really real deep conversations. And it's, you know, like you said, it's the combination of the environment, the food, the just what you do at a coffee shop or a restaurant and your incredible question asking skills. So
thank you.
Yeah, no, it really is incredible. You know, this is my 2 second soapbox, which is there's nothing more frustrating to me than when you have these brilliant minds on a podcast, a show, whatever, and the host asks the same questions and then they give an answer and you're over there watching going, oh my God, wait, what? What? Or, and then the host does the, you know, the obligatory, great.
Yes, exactly.
What? Where's gold right there and you missed it.
Exactly. Exactly right.
The opposite of that. So thank you for bringing, I think, what is really richness to the world to help us all be better innovators. And that leads me to my next question, which is, you know, given what you said in the beginning of it takes hustle, right? It takes drive, it takes passion, it takes a vision and this desire to serve beyond yourself. Given all that, why do you think so many of us have such a hard time unleashing that innovator inside of us. And you know, obviously I'm coming from the place where I firmly believe and experience has shown that everybody has it, but there's a small percent that really go for it.
You know why? And it's as simple as this. You know, anything in life that's worth doing, that's really great, does, everyone would be doing it, right? If it was easy, everyone would be doing it. So it is the hard work. It is the strategic thinking. It is the trying to think differently. And the effort that it takes to do that, that is worth it. And it's why most people won't do it, because it does, you do have to walk the extra mile. And so it really has to be within you, and you really have to care deeply in order to do it. So I would say to keep going for it, you know, for the people, and they know who they are when they have an idea and they want to make it happen, to just keep going. Because really, when you look at some of the great performers and the greats of our time, it's the people who really just kept going.
Well, I think it loops back to what you said earlier about the no's, you know, really listening to it and not seeing that as the end. I think oftentimes what you said just kind of sparked this. Oftentimes we let that no stop us. So we start all excited and then something hits us, some brick wall, and we let that stop us versus thinking, well, how do I just get around it? I can't get over it. That's a no. But how do I get around it? And you hear two or three at a time, it starts to become, I mean, frankly, demoralizing.
Well, and also asking yourself, why is it a no? Not just, is it a no, but why did they say no? And sometimes you'll get feedback and sometimes you won't. But the answer to why is it a no is sometimes can just even a difference of 10% change in your pitch could make all the difference between a yes and a no. So, you know, maybe it doesn't quite have enough value for that company. Well, what can you do to provide an extra amount of value that it would be a yes? I always like to think of reverse engineering things and think to myself, okay, what would be a slam dunk for this person that I'm offering something to? And then kind of reverse engineering that.
Yeah, the why behind the no. That is great advice to end on. I got one last question for you that I meant to ask in the beginning, but what you said to introduce yourself was so good, I had to just keep going down the path. So what's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
Gosh.
Something personal, like, you know, a hobby, an experience, a passion, something. Yeah.
Well, in the pandemic, I took up two vices. That was bread making and bourbon drinking. And
got all the yeast.
It's not really good for my waistline, but I am enjoying the process of learning about bourbon, and the house smells amazing. So I'll leave it at that.
I used to be married to a guy who made alcohol all the time. Like, our entire basement smelled like all the time. I was convinced if child services ever came over, we'd be in massive trouble because our house just stank like alcohol, like fermenting alcohol all the time. Oh my God. So do you have a favorite bread?
I've been making challah bread because then you can save it and make this amazing French toast the next day. More bread to eating.
I'll be right over. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on Inside Launch Street. It was an absolute blast and just so incredibly insightful. So thank you for sharing your journey and kind of where the show came from, but also I think a little bit of the journey of your guests as well. And I'm honored to be a part of that.
You're so wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.